Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Today, hundreds of Google employees and contractors around the world have been staging walkouts in cities like London and Tokyo and Singapore around 11 a.m. local time, and more are set to start soon. These workers are protesting how the internet giant has handled accusations of sexual misconduct against its executives. And let's talk this through with NPR business correspondent Yuki Noguchi. Hi, Yuki.
Hi, good morning, David.
Good morning. All right, so these workers feel that the company has been too lenient with these executives who've been accused. I guess we should start by explaining what the accusations are.
Well, the allegations are that Google protected itself and some executives accused of sexual harassment by not only keeping the real reasons for their dismissal secret, but even paying them massive severances. In particular, one story featured in the New York Times last week seems to have blown the lid off this. Andy Rubin, the man who helped create Google's Android system, was paid $90 million in severance and given essentially a hero's send-off when he left in 2014, even though he was being asked to resign because of his behavior. And then on top of that, other executives were permitted to stay long past when Google knew about problem behavior. And employees who are organizing the walkout say they're disgusted, and for every story that they are aware of, there are many untold stories.
Well, so how is the company responding to this moment?
Well, they seem to be acknowledging it in part. Google CEO Sundar Pichai sent out an email this week to employees, essentially apologizing for the company's past actions and clearly seeming to suggest that it erred in its decision-making with respect to Rubin. Here's what he wrote, quote, "I understand the anger and disappointment that many of you feel. I feel it as well, and I'm fully committed to making progress on an issue that has persisted far too long in our society and, yes, here at Google, too." End quote. The company also notes that since Rubin's departure, it has handled subsequent cases of sexual harassment, nearly 50 in all, very differently and without granting severance. So that's their position.
Okay, so the company responding, but evidently not enough for employees who are staging these walkouts as you and I are talking. So what do employees want to see happen beyond that?
So the Google employees who've organized this walkout are demanding five changes. One involves ending a forced arbitration clause in their employment agreements, which are increasingly common, but effectively keep all workplace claims under wraps by requiring employees to resolve them in arbitration. So that's one demand number one. And then there's a commitment to pay equity and opportunity, and then generally sort of transparency with respect to how they handle sexual harassment, implementing better systems for it. And then employees will also want a seat on the board of directors. The employers are saying this is basically emblematic of a broader problem with culture at Google, where even highly skilled workers in positions of power are dismissed and unheard.
All right, quite a moment at Google. NPR's Yuki Noguchi. Yuki, thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
The first thing we're going to do to, I think, stop racism is stop focusing on racism. Living with regular racial discrimination is a reality for many people. It can affect them psychologically and even lead to depression. And now a new study out of UC Berkeley found that those effects can also be physical. Professor Amani Allen of the School of Public Health studied Black women in the Bay Area and found the more they experienced repeated incidents of racism, the higher their risk of chronic illness, like diabetes or high blood pressure. And it's because of something called allostatic load. I talked with Professor Allen to explain.
So allostatic load is an early marker of disease risk and biological aging more generally. One way to think about allostatic load is as a summary measure, a biological indicator that's a summary measure of how well our different biological systems are operating. So let me back up and talk for a second about this term allostasis. So our bodies are comprised of integrated biological systems, meaning that our various systems, our cardiovascular system, our respiratory system, our immune system, our neuroendocrine system, these systems work together for optimal functioning of the entire body. So what I find compelling about this concept of allostasis and allostatic load is that it provides a snapshot of how well our various biological systems are doing. And many of these systems are involved in the body's stress response. So you may recall instances where either you have said or you've heard someone say, I'm stressed out, my adrenaline is pumping. And when people are saying that, what they're really referring to is the ways in which our body naturally adapts to environmental demands, demands that we're presented with on any given day, being late for work and having to rush to get to work, all kind of family-related stressors, all kinds of stressors.
So if we break this down, if I've had a bad day because I've been discriminated against on the street, at work, wherever— that stress is linked to biology. How, again?
So if, and it could be racial discrimination, it could be any other stressor that you appraise as threatening, and that's key. The way that we appraise the stressors that we come into contact with on a day-to-day basis matters in terms of how our body reacts. So if we are discriminated against and we appraise that experience as threatening to us, then a number of things happen. It can increase the level of inflammation in our bodies, for example. And the key is that that's actually okay in the short term. When that stressor happens over and over and over again, it's that chronic stress that precipitates allostatic load.
Right. And what were some of the things you were finding?
So our main finding was that we did find a link between racial discrimination and allostatic load. However, our findings varied based on the level of educational attainment.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So among African American women with lower levels of education, which we defined as having less than or equal to a high school diploma, those women reporting more frequent experiences of racial discrimination had higher levels of allostatic load. However, among women with more than a high school diploma, we found the opposite. African American women with more than a high school diploma who reported more frequent experiences of racial discrimination actually had lower levels of allostatic load, which was very surprising and counterintuitive.
Well, how do you explain that? Why?
Well, one potential explanation is that previous research has shown that identifying or acknowledging racial discrimination can be protective in and of itself versus internalizing those experiences and engaging in self-blame. So if I have an adverse experience, interpersonal experience with a person of a different race, I can choose to say, or I can acknowledge it as racial discrimination and understand that it's due to the prejudicial beliefs or discriminatory actions of someone else and has nothing to do with me. On the other hand, I could also internalize that experience and say that I deserved that. Right? That was warranted. That experience, that lack of courtesy was warranted.
What kind of recommendations can come out of your study, and to whom? Who needs to understand this in healthcare? In, I don't know, policymakers? Where do you see this benefiting people?
When we think about race relations, we've seen a lot in the news about police profiling and egregious acts such as being choked to death on a New York City street or being shot in the back while handcuffed face down at a train station. These are egregious acts of racism and racial discrimination that for some reason in our society we still debate. But what our study shows, I think, is that in addition to those egregious acts, is that racial discrimination and racism can impact our health in ways that are not always visible. And so often you hear people talk about stress as the silent killer. Well, racial discrimination is one form of stress, but it's a form of stress that African-American women report experiencing day in and day out across many different situations in their lives, whether they're at work, whether they're in the grocery store, whether they're in their car on their way somewhere, just experiencing both mild and major forms of racial discrimination, trying to get health care, trying to get housing, et cetera. And so this kind of just chronic, pervasive, unrelenting experiences of racial discrimination chip away at our ability to just be healthy. They wear us down in ways that compromise our ability to live to our full potential as African American women.
That's Professor Amani Allen of the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. You can learn more about her study at klw.org.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, November 2nd, 2018. So I have been told, new era in neutralizing workplace racism. Now on Fridays, we rotated the broadcasts. Stacy in the UK, longtime participant, investor in the cows. She has contributed mightily to the program for about a year and a half at least, probably more than that, specifically with workplace racism. And she had said that it would be more convenient, a little easier for her in terms of time and energy. I always make an effort to timestamp when she's on the program, just to acknowledge the time and energy that is being invested for her to be awake at, 3 a.m. In fact, let's see, she's with us now. So it's 1:15 a.m. Saturday morning. And that is why we switched, because she had said some time ago that it would be easier because for her, she wouldn't have to be at work, so she could stay up without, having to think, oh, man, I got to go to work. And since we have had a number of other folks who do not live in the States, who are in South Korea and other parts of the world, who've called in specifically for workplace racism, it might make it easier for other non-white people who don't live in the States to call in and participate. They also might, have Saturday off. So, new era, Fridays, workplace racism. Book club, we already did yesterday on Thursdays, moving forward. Book club is Thursdays, workplace racism, Fridays, both programs, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's it. The broadcast, neutralizing workplace racism. Nothing else has changed. We are still here, dedicated exclusively to addressing the problem of white supremacy racism in the people area of people activity known as labor. I guess you could file this in economics too. They're all kind of related. If we have any non-white people victims of white supremacy, you have figured out I am not mistreated on the job. I don't have to worry about my health being adversely impacted. I'm good. Racists, if they are on my job, they're not on my floor. They don't have, any control over what happens to me. Anything that I need, if it's a new computer, a new doorstop, you know, a month off for whatever reasons, hey, I got it. No problems. And it's going to be like that until, you know, I'm ready to retire. You should be the first person to dial in. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. That segment on Google, they were talking about folks walking off the job, protesting globally, Me Too movement, how Google has handled sexual harassment cases where whites, they don't get fired, they get transferred, and in some cases get a big send-off and big check severance, as they call it. I cannot recall global protests over the mistreatment of niggers on the job. And I mean, you have black people worldwide who are being terrorized on the job. Global walkout, they don't have that in the tech industry. You all are not hiring niggers, and we see it. You're mistreating the niggers that are here, and we're not going to take it. In fact, we're not coming in Monday or Tuesday. How about that? Has that happened? Do they do that? They don't organize for niggers? The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you are being abused on the job and you would like suggestions on your situation, perhaps how to deal with it, if you figured out some things that work, we always need to hear that. But if you would just like maybe a different perspective on what's happening or how you're trying to handle things, always welcome. We will offer our counter racist view. But again, you are the expert on your situation. I hope that's the way that people think about it. You are the expert, and this is just, you know, offering maybe a few helpful tidbits or what have you, or reminders sometimes about what we should be thinking about as we attempt to solve problems without creating new problems in the workplace. The email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. If you are not able to call in, but you have either a suggestion, a problem, you just have commentary that you'd like to share, you can drop an email and I can read your commentary anonymously on the broadcast. I know we did not, I don't think I brought up Halloween on the program last week explicitly. So certainly if we have any folks who had any shenanigans with the holiday to report, I think someone might have talked about a candy incident recently on a broadcast, but any of that or the costumes, there was a segment, I think some people got fired. The video, it's on the social media for this broadcast, where some whites, they had some sort of tacky costume that they said, oh yeah, we're just celebrating Halloween, you know, pretending to be a Negro for the day. And they, you know, allegedly got fired or transferred or whatever it is. But if folks have any reports of, you know, anything associated with the so-called holiday, that would certainly be appreciated. Also, I know the midterms, as they call them, formal voting, I think a retired firefighter calls it, that I am sure is coming up on the jobs. Particularly, I would think if you're in areas where, you know, key voting is taking place, if you're in Georgia, if you're in Florida, some other locations, like, oh, yeah, like I could see where there's some conversations that might be coming up about the elections. I would not have anything to say about the elections at all. If they ask if you saw the debate, who are you going to vote for? What do you think about candidate such and such? I haven't been paying attention to any of that. That's what I would have to say. What do you think? Who are you? And that's one where I would quickly try and get that question back. I talk about that consistently. Stay in the question lane. You are not here to broadcast your views on the midterms or what you think, or is this a referendum, you know, on the Trump president? I haven't been paying attention to any of that. What do you think, if anything? And you don't even have that. That is optional to even, you know, toss that question out of there. You can just leave it at, I haven't been paying attention to anything. And have a lot of work that I need to get back to. Click, 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 and back on your, you know, computer or whatever you do on your job. If folks have had to deal with that, though, I certainly would be interested. Or if you have, you know, or if you use it as an opportunity to listen and get information from the folks that you are around. Last time that we did workplace racism, a listener sent me a document. It was a form with racial classifications, and I said it was the picture. I couldn't read it, and I asked that it be resent, and I was obliged. So I will read you this form. It reads, invitation to self-identify race, gender, as a protected veteran. And it reads, to enable us to meet government reporting regulations and maintain affirmative action plan, we request that you complete this personal data form. Information will be used solely for government reporting purposes and will be detached and kept separate from your file. That's in boldface print. Any information that you choose to provide will not be considered by the company for employment purposes and will be treated as personal and confidential. Your voluntary cooperation is appreciated. And then it has a space for you to fill out your name and date, gender, male, female. That's it. I'm surprised there's no, you know, other options for gender. Probably by the time they get the form out next year, it'll have other options. Continuing, race, ethnicity. Please check the appropriate boxes below so you can check multiple. First option, Hispanic or Latino. A person of Cuban, Mexican, Puerto Rican, South or Central American, or other Spanish culture or origin, regardless of race. That right there, major reason why I say when talking about racism, white supremacy, the term Hispanic, Latino should not be used. We're not talking about race. That's just what it said. Next category, white, not Hispanic or Latino. A person having origins in any of the original peoples of Europe, the Middle East, or North Africa. Original peoples. Next, black or African American, not Hispanic or Latino. A person having origins in any of the black racial groups of Africa. Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, not Hispanic or Latino. A person having origins in any of the original peoples of Hawaii, Guam, Samoa, or other Pacific Islands. Asian, not Hispanic or Latino. A person having origins in any of the original peoples of the Far East, Southeast, Asia, or the Indian subcontinent, including, for example, Cambodia, China, India, Japan, Korea, Malaysia, Pakistan, the Philippine Islands, Thailand, and Vietnam. Last but not least, American Indian or Alaska Native, not Hispanic or Latino. Now they said they have not Hispanic or Latino next to all of these, but next to Hispanic or Latino, it said regardless of race or culture. So, and they said you could pick multiple. Just throw anything down for race. Confusion. So American Indian or Alaska Native. A person having origins in any of the original peoples of North and South America, including Central America, and who maintain tribal affiliation or community attachment. What does that mean? Anywho, thank you for sharing. Anytime these type of forms come out on the job, would be great to study just to see how they refine and what sort of definitions they give out. Anytime that racial classifications are being discussed explicitly, I think our caller in the courthouse down in Florida, I think this happened as well, where they were talking about racial classifications at the courthouse, and it was the same sort of sloppiness and confusion, and he asked questions. It could be a learning opportunity. So I definitely, since this is voluntary, I don't think I would fill this out. I certainly wouldn't be in a hurry to fill it out since it's so confusing and what have you, but I might use that as an opportunity to ask questions. I certainly would file any of these types of reports that you get at your job. If folks have any thoughts on that, you can feel free. Thank you kindly for sharing. I did not see the photograph. I think Thomas in New York also said that he emailed a photograph that was workplace related. So if you want to perhaps mail it again, Thomas in New York, and I'll keep an eye on my email as we proceed, and then I can comment on that, or I can share it if you want me to share it on online or something as we are rolling through the broadcast. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. Oh, wait a minute. I did want to say the second segment where they were talking about how racism impacts the mental or the health of Black females. We are rotated. I was in the mindset of thinking book club for a long time. It's going to take me a while for my brain computer to adjust to this not being book club Friday. We are reading Dr. Tommy Curry, The Man Knot. Woo! Race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of Black manhood. It did stick out to me in that study that it was isolated to looking at Black females, and they made an allusion to someone being choked in New York streets. They made an allusion to someone being shot while handcuffed at a BART station. Not only did the study exclude Black males and how racism impacts their health, the Black males that were killed weren't even mentioned. I thought they had the say her name category where it was make sure let's identify if a Black female is killed. Don't include Black males in the study. Don't even name the Black males who are killed, who are supposedly the source of where the stress comes from, seeing their explicit deaths. That did stand out to me majorly in hearing that report. The book club, now on Thursdays, Dr. Tommy Curry, The Man Knot, Race, Class, Genre, and Dilemmas of Black Manhood, next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Now, folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Thomas in New York.
Gus, I just sent it to you while you were talking. I resent it. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Yeah, it's the one I usually use. But hey, I got janky phone service. What can I say? I'm a victim. But I did.
I do think that word janky, I think that might be a racist term. I will have to double check. But yes, I did get the email.
Janky. I would like to hear. Yeah, I won't use it if it is. Okay, my terrorist is on vacation. So, what's she? Left interrogated by her. The French lady has been avoiding doing her job, per se. Like I told you, these files had to be done first by the partners. The partners didn't want to do it, so now the new strategy is to give it to the administrative secretaries or administrative assistants, which I've been doing. She has a partner now, and she doesn't want to do these files. She's coming up with excuses. She has to book interviews, everything like that. I think I mentioned that last week. So this week, I was told under no circumstances am I not to leave give her stuff. She should be free. Give her everything that's left, which was only 5 buckets. The other secretary, the guy's old secretary, did 25 buckets. It was only 5 buckets left, you know, and each bucket probably has about 10 to 15 file clients, you know, in them that you have to look through, make sure all that paperwork has been scanned in the system before it gets thrown away. And original paperwork, you know, has to go back to the client. So, you know, that's pretty much the task of going through these files. And it's tedious. So either way, I bring her these 5 files, and she came over to me and said, you know, last week I really wasn't, you know, busy. I just didn't feel like being bothered with them. But this week, you know, I just bring them over to me. You know, walked off. So I was so pissed because, you know, I initially brought her to 20 because that's what I was supposed to do, the 25 buckets. You know, and then I was told to bring them all back because, so I'm pissed, you know, because this is labor and work. So I go tell the girl who did the files for her, you know, between you and I, you know, this is what she just said. So she's like, ooh, you know, I can't stand her. Either way, she goes and tells another secretary who goes and tells my terrorist. And now the terrorist wants to interrogate me about it. So I'm like, man. So either way, it was the terrorist last day before she went on vacation, and it kind of just was left hanging. That's probably a racist term, too. It was just left unsettled, and she's gone. So it's situation one. So either way, all of the other administrative assistants, it's a Filipino lady, a Mexican who can pass for black or maybe a Puerto Rican or Dominican, but she looks more like us than a Mexican. However, she's an area aider, a Colombian girl who looks like a Mexican to me, and a Russian. So, you know, the white Russian, all of them stopped talking to her because, you know, they feel like, you know, they're doing all this extra work and she's just been getting away with doing nothing. And also they don't like her, which is the consentment throughout the office amongst, you know, the people that have to work with her, including the receptionist who's black, and I already told you they had incidents. So now she wants to have a meeting with all of the people that she feels doesn't like her. She wants me included in the meeting, the CEO, who's her boss, the lady, and she wants to clear the air with everyone. And she does not want my terrorist in the meeting, who is the person I wish was in this meeting, because she has no idea a lot of this stuff is even going on. And, you know, that would be termination, you know, for this lady. Either way, I've noticed that also what they started doing is delegating some of her work for her CEO to another person. So I'm thinking that something's about to go down with her. Either way, last, you know, thing I wanted to say about this incident was I let Gus, she literally showed me her ass, an old white butt. You know what I'm saying? Thomas, I was trying to put my bookshelf up in my new apartment, and when I pulled to pull it close to me, I fell. Yeah. And I fell on the radiator, and then she goes to the side to look, you know, see who's coming, opens the door to my little space where they allocate me to sit, and then she pulls up her skirt to show me where she fell, and I'm like, whoa, don't do that, don't ever do that, you know. So she's like, oh, no, I'm just trying to show you because it hurts so bad, and either way, you know. So I was like, oh, so I got up and walked away. So when I came, you know, back, and hours later, she comes in and says, oh, I'm so sorry, da-da-da-da. And I'm having a guy come to my house tonight. I went to this pay someone $5 an hour site, and they're going to come build me a new bookshelf from scratch or something like that. So I said, oh, okay, great. You know, so she walks off, and either way. So the next day, she comes in and starts telling me about how beautiful her new bookshelf is coming along, and she's going to give this guy $100. And instead of $5 an hour for all the labor he's doing, and da 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 da. So I'm like, all right, you know, so I'm at this time, I'm doing my work, and I'm also looking at the news as it feeds on the computer, which it scrolls across. And so she puts her, like, your hands together and both her elbows on my shoulder, and like her face right near my face and trying to see, oh, what are you looking at there? And I said, whoa, please, you know, oh, no, you know, I tell you I'm touching Philly, you know what I'm saying? So she walks off. So I go tell the receptionist, and of course, you know, I take a note of everything that's happened, and I also tell people. So she says, you know what, she is overstepped. I said, I'm gonna nip this in the bud for sure tomorrow, because she done show me her ass now. So she comes in the next day, and she does that same thing I told her yesterday not to do. And I said, listen, I'm not going to tell you again not to touch me in this workplace. This is totally inappropriate. It's against the rules. You work for the CEO. You should know the rules. Do not touch me in this workplace. If someone walks in here and they sees this, they're going to think something inappropriate is going on, and more than likely, being that I am black, they're going to accuse me. Thomas, I am so sorry. I am going to never touch you again. I am so sorry. I am never going to touch you again. I promise you. I said, yes, and please, because I can't afford to lose my job because you want to be touchy-feely and that's your culture. This is America. We don't do that here. Yes, and I'm so sorry. I understand because you're black. This country is so racist. Unlike France, this country, I said, you know what? I got up and walked away. So that was how it left off, and that was yesterday, I believe, when that happened. Today, nothing. But, hey, Thomas, how are you? Listen, I have the files. Can you come get them and throw them out? I'm done with this and done with that. Regular work type conversation the way I would like it. And I'll mute my line. Thank you, guys.
Incredible. Talked about Me Too on the program and emphasized the importance of having a code about unwanted touching. That's a hashtag or a tag, that I use with every episode of Workplace Racism, because there's been so much commentary about unwanted touching from non-white listeners for years, even before Workplace Racism was like its own separate, you know, segment on the program. You got to have that code. Like, you know, once anything, you know, where it's hugging, anything, showing, lifting of clothing and that sort of thing, immediately, this is what I'm going to say. And jerking away, I think we talked about that before. And me and others have talked about that. If they're coming up and putting a hand on you, bam, you jerk away or move your hand away or push their arm away or whatever it is. And bam, you say whatever you're going to say. Do not ever touch me. That is totally inappropriate and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, whatever you're going to say. This is the same white woman, Thomas, who last week in the office was yelling like, oh, I just love me some Thomas. I mean, he is just the best, you know, colored boy in the world.
This is the same one. Yes. I'm sorry, Gus. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I think last week when you said, you know, she did that, she was talking about how much she loved you. I was like, whoa, this woman is dangerous. Like, man, just that, just that alone is so inappropriate. Like, anytime in a workplace where it's seeming like it's something that could be, this could be leading towards sexual misconduct, if it already isn't, that my man Walter Beach III, nip it in the knees. Let's get that before it even gets started. Like, because I just thought last week, like, why, that's what I said. She is dangerous. This white woman is dangerous. And I'm totally not surprised that the lead off, let me pull down my clothes and show you the bruise on my hind parts. I mean, how many times have I said that the last 2 months? I have been totally traumatized. At least once a day, I have a response where Bill Cosby, I would have sprinted. I would have had to find someone right then. Because, I mean, just the magnitude of how inappropriate that is. I mean, imagine you being in the office and, oh, my goodness, I fell on the radiator. Look here, Becky. Let me show you where I fell. Oh, wait a minute. Just look. Imagine that under any circumstances. Oh, I would have immediately ran to a white person that could solve problems. This has got to be reported right now. I mean, whoa. There's no context where that is acceptable at all. Yeah, and then it was two more, and they escalate, and that's the same thing. We've noticed that pattern for years. It'll start with something innocuous. That's what they do. I think we've had so many whites who've testified to this sort of thing. the bully. They like to, you know, today I'll come and I'll push you around and, you know, I'll take a potato chip from you. And tomorrow I come and I push you around and I take your whole lunch. And then the next day I come and push you around, I take your lunch and, you know, take whatever money you got. I mean, it just goes up a little bit. How much more can I get away? And that sexual thing, so many people have said it started out, they would make some sort of sexual joke or some sort of verbal comment that was crude. And then it would just go a little further and just keep going and keep going. And, you know, how much can I get? I'm white. You know, you're just nigger. So many folks have talked about that, being afraid to say no, and that power dynamic in the workplace. Be prepared for that. So you are the first time Walter Beach cut at the knees. Nothing that you did incorrect. I would have the speech and how you handled it. When it got to the third time, that's what I would have done the very first time when she did when she said last week, when she was going around talking about how much she loved you. I think that would have been totally appropriate right there. Certainly by the time she gets to, you know, I got to show you my, you know, drawers and such, like, oh man, like white person, all of this has got to be documented. I mean, she should be written up like that, in my view. I mean, she should be written up. Like, I've seen black people fired for less. Bill Cosby, she should be written up. Did Thomas in New York, anything you want to add, or other folks have comments on this one? Everyone should be prepared for this sort of situation.
She wanted me to touch her bruise as well, which, you know, and you're right, I should have nipped this in the bud when she, you know, first got, you know, really, you know, touchy and talky. But, you know, I was trying to just avoid it, and every time she would try to touch me, I would jerk away. And but nah, it's no more of that anymore. I done seen a white behind. That's it for me. And an old one. Oh my God. I mean, oof. So nonetheless, Gus, the person I could call her the terrorist now, because she's terrorizing. She said to me the same day that this incident happened that, you know, the best place I've ever lived was in Egypt. So I said, oh, really? She said, the men will whistle at me down the street because, you know, my beautiful eyes, and you should have seen me back then. And I was, but I'll mute my mic. I was thinking.
Dangerous. Extremely dangerous.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter. Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings, everyone. Yes, I just was listening to Thomas's report, and I just have been thinking over the course of, I guess, probably about a couple of months with Thomas giving a report on basically the same people. And based on he and I conversations, I rate Mr. Thomas as being a courteous person. I would say almost by nature, you know, pretty courteous person. And basically with the type of personality that I'm hearing from how he's been describing these white females, that they are pretty much very aggressive, and they interpret courtesy as an invitation for their shenanigans. As far as what I know about my personality, if I have to actually work at being courteous in a lot of cases. And what I mean by courteous, I'm not necessarily talking about the words that come out of your mouth, you know, body language, you know, that sort of thing. They play a part of it also. First and foremost, let me ask you a quick question. Is the workspace limited to whereas it's impossible not to have arm contact with any one of these white females? That's for Thomas, the question.
Repeat your question, sir.
Is it possible that there's enough workspace where you wouldn't have physical contact, immediate contact, meaning arm length contact, or maybe a little bit further that you actually can create space between yourself and those employees?
The problem I have, sir, is the place I'm designated to sit at. And this is temporarily because the firm is moving. The place I'm designated to sit at behind me is the company's color copy machine. And certain things that have to be done with the copy machine are my responsibility. This person likes to have all her documents printed in color. So she comes into my workspace to use that copy machine. And it's because of the partner, you know, her partner before she was hired would have me do the same stuff with her on the colored machine. So either way, when you use the colored machine, let's just say the seat that I have, is probably about 2 feet between me and the back of the person that's standing at the colored copy machine. Copier, probably about 2 feet of space between us. So she's the only one that has to turn around, and she does this to everyone, gets very close to them in their face. And I noticed that the terrorist also does this. I think this is a European thing. However, you know, it's enough space for her to not be nowhere near me. I mean, I feel like she does it intentional, and right. you get what I'm saying. So,
yeah. Well, I would just suggest, it's hard to report on it because you know you're doing a good job of describing the place to me, but I would just say that. Either have something in my hands where actually I can block any type of. In other words, who the subjects are of the discontentment that you're getting. You know who the subjects are. So anytime that they are within earshot or your vision, be prepared to practice some form of jujitsu. You know, as far as preventing that person from, you know, touching you, that sort of thing, and you know, and perhaps maybe from that being a very, very consistent, that you are doing it all of the time with very little conversation, you know, with it, then that person would probably get the message. I know it's very delicate because you're in a workspace where probably your means of communicating with other employees have a determination on you being employed. And I heard you say that you need that employment, you know, so it's kind of complicated, you know, as far as that concern. But, yeah, just, you know, like you said, you just being consistent at it. And also that person getting a good understanding of your body language along connected with your voice, would perhaps make it a little bit better, you know, as far as that concerned. But hopefully I'm making some sense. But I have a couple of reports to make if I can do it right now.
Proceed.
Is that possible?
Proceed.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay. First report, person that is kind of close to me, I would say, female. This is a case because I heard you made a report. You played a recording of a report on females, and I think I heard the word stress involved. And actually, stress is that disease that corrupts other parts of the body. Of a person's body, and in turn, you know, it's a very, it could be in a lot of cases a very quick breakdown. and stress is the first enemy that actually corrupts the body. And this is what I'm listening to this person describe to me about her stress on the job, to whereas it's so severe to her that she's actually thinking about, as a teacher, thinking about not working anymore this year, as far as that concern. And in turn, like I said, it affects it creates other medical conditions. In her case, she has all of the symptoms of vertigo.
Hold on one second, sir. I just wanted to ask a quick question. You said she was thinking about not teaching for the rest of the school year. When did the school year start for her?
It's the school year started just about what everybody's school year starts. I think in
late August or early September. That's when it started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's for folks. It's
November. I think the problem probably has been going on even longer than what she described. But this is what she was telling me, that she's thinking about, not going. She was in the hospital yesterday.
Wow.
As far as that concerned. And so this is the first time I'm hearing about this issue. And she was thinking about, that is because actually she has the symptoms of vertigo. I think some people may know that Mr. Fuller has vertigo, whereas you can become dizzy. When you're dizzy, things it's not good for you to be in something moving or let alone talking about you driving, operating in some sort of machinery yourself, such as a car, that sort of thing. And, so it's kind of like applicable to what you were reporting before the program officially starts, when you play the recordings and whatnot. The last instance was in the gym where I work out at. It's kind of like a daily routine. This gym that's kind of like right down the street. It's actually in walking distance that I go to. Is in a large community center, quote unquote, there are two very attractive Black females who work in that area during the daytime, early morning, afternoon, yoga class. And I think it's the other class is some basic exercise class, primarily for elderly. And, the Black males that I converse with after I finish working out with, one guy is describe it to be a problem that he has with, this is kind of like anti-Blackness, as far as under the item of racism concerned. And, he is, mentioning about, he doesn't like the idea that she is being selective on who comes into her office and that sort of thing. And basically I was just sitting there listening to this guy. And then I stated to him, and I put it in terms of a question: do you understand that this is her workplace? something that you would figure that a person would know. Do you understand this is a workplace? And from that standpoint, being as her workplace, she has an option to allow or disallow anybody to come into the office where she works at. And it should be a certain type of behavior that you carry, and also as well as with her as an employee. Specifically, being I was talking to him, I was basically talking about what he was describing to me on what he's going to do, as far as to her restricting on who comes into her door. Primarily, the males that works out, they. Of course, interested in these attractive females and whatnot, but they, in my opinion, don't have a constructive means of going about associating and or addressing with these ladies, especially one particular lady. And sometimes one has to just factor in, you know, no contact or no communication, then that would lessen or totally eliminate the conflict. And basically, he and I, it never did get to an argument or even a debate. He primarily understood on where I was coming from with it. And he's been showing some indications to that as far as that concerned, because I've been talking about a codified behavior in the gym, you know, conversing with the other guys in there as far as that concerned. I've already been talking about that as far as in conversation in itself. But that's basically my report for today. Thank you.
Spectacular. Black self-respect in action, in my opinion. And being able to ask a question. Other folks who would like to dial in, if you have comments on what has been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation that you would like to address, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
My God.
I heard the male caller as well, Stacy in the UK. It is 1:58 a.m. Saturday morning. Good to hear from you.
To hear from you too, Gus, and hello to the rest of the callers. In fact, we've had the clock change, Gus. So 4 minutes to, I'm on my computer anyway, 4 minutes to one. I get an extra hour for a little while. before I do my updates, I just wanted to check, was the woman who exposed herself to Thomas, was that the French woman?
Yes, I think it was, yes.
Yeah, I thought so, because I was going to say last week that her story about the being groped on the street by the black males, that just sounded a bit like it was her fantasizing to Thomas rather than actually relaying the true story. And I'm not sure if he actually said that last week, but it just sounded like she's grooming him rather than anything else. And now clearly that's the case. I do think, though, that even though I agree that things should be said earlier sometimes, if not as often as possible, I think in this instance it may have worked out for the best that he didn't, because she probably would have made up some kind of excuse or cried if he'd have spoke up about it sooner. But the fact that she is bearing her soul, let's say, to him, there's just no excuse for that. It's totally inappropriate. And so I actually think it works out for the best. And I do think something should be said, because it's just, man, I mean, what kind of justification can you make for that? It's crazy. Anyway, a couple of things. In terms of the stress, the news clip that you played on the stress, I mean, yeah, I did think the sort of gender focus of that was very strange. However, I didn't completely understand why they were making the distinction between people who have got degrees and those who haven't, because in terms of people not understanding racism, I don't necessarily think that's determined by your, certainly for non-white people, determined by your level of education, because some people who have degrees or higher can be just as confused. So I did find that, I mean, I need to re-listen to it, but that didn't quite make sense to me. And then I've learned, I mean, I won't go into the detail of it now, but this week my daughter was feeding back to me on some workplace racism and harassment that she's been getting. She's dealing with that situation But one thing that she did say to me is that she didn't have an appreciation of what constituted bullying. And even though I've been contributing to workplace racism and the broadcast for a while, and we do talk about, you know, codification in the workplace, I guess I had not expected her to be more savvy, but I think I didn't appreciate that she didn't have as much detail on certain situations as I probably, you know, I just took certain things for granted. And she'd asked me about, she made a comment about not realising that the way her manager, who shouldn't have been her manager, it was an inappropriate arrangement, which HR is dealing with, was getting her to set her own objectives. And she's a graduate intake, so they have a very structured program, which is another reason why I didn't appreciate some of the issues. But I advised her this week to make sure that she gets hold of the handbook and read it. But I kind of kicked myself because I thought, hang on a minute, I've been contributing to workplace racism for so long and there's been so much discussion on the handbook. I didn't actually articulate the words to my daughter, make sure you read your handbook. So that's the lesson learned for me. But the situation is resolving itself anyway. Then one more thing I'll comment on or update on is I asked a question a few months ago when I returned to work about people's experience of mediation. And I found the feedback that was given really useful. And just as a reminder, I returned to work in July, and the mediation was proposed by the chair of the appeal hearing of the grievance that I had gone through as a way of rebuilding the relationships, and this is what was stated, in the team. Now, I'm sure they had a different agenda, but however, that was what was being proposed. So the idea was that certain people would be interviewed by the mediator individually, identify the issues, and then this allegedly is all confidential. She would then come up with a plan for how the mediation would be structured, and people would get a chance to comment on it and then go forward. But somewhere in that process, because it is voluntary, people could decide that they don't want to go forward. Okay, so fair enough. I had an initial interview with the person, but because there were so many issues, she needed to come back for another session with me. And she had said, she had proposed a particular day, but it wasn't confirmed with us. HR then got back in contact with me, and this was being done in the first 2 weeks of me returning to the organisation. So in fact, I saw her for the first appointment the first week, and then HR contacted me and said, oh, well, the person is in the building tomorrow or whatever. Can you see her? If not, give me a date for when you can. So I said, oh, well, I've got a couple of things, because I was on a reduced week as well as part of my phased return. So I can do such and such and such. Then I got a really test email back from the HR person who said, why can't you see her today, and can you arrange it with your manager? So I said, have I misunderstood your email? Because you said either today, but if not, come back to you with various dates or when I could do it. And then she said, oh, yes, I did say that, but I mean, can't you speak to your manager and get your work reprioritized? And so I thought, okay, you're making an issue here. So I said, I can make myself available, blah, 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 blah. And she had switched up her tone because she was being incredibly rude and deceptive in the email. But anyway, so I had that. And plus, what I'd said to her is that, or she said that the consultant had told her that she had spoken to me about potentially being in the building and doing that interview that day. And I said, well, it wasn't confirmed because she just, I didn't have my diary with me, which was the discussion. So anyway, I went along, had that second meeting, and then the next step was for her to put this plan together. And in the very first meeting, I didn't appreciate the tone of the mediator, who is allegedly independent and going to act in a confidential manner. And so in that meeting, I had to say to her at one point, because all I was doing was actually asking questions, because for me, I couldn't understand how, if there had been issues around violence that has not been acknowledged by the organisation, how is a conversation going to resolve that? Because the person has not acknowledged that they actually did it. So what precisely are we mediating? And I was asking for clarification on how mediation would work in that instance. And she kept being really off-key and in the end, or really rude and hostile in her responses. And in the end, I had to say to her, it sounds like you're annoyed. And when I sort of said that, she then thought she would switch modes because she realised that she'd been a little bit too obvious in her bias. And then she started to be extra nice, to the extent that, you know, she's speaking to me as if I was some kind of child. It was really peculiar, but I just let it go because I thought, you know, I don't really have to go ahead with this, so I'll let her continue. Anyway, to speed this up, months went by, I didn't hear anything. I then got an email from HR to say, you have been, as you know, you've been offered coaching sessions. Note the word coaching. I've heard back from the mediator and we'd like to offer you further coaching sessions. So I'm like, what the hell is this? So I emailed her back and I said, I'm a little bit confused. I have been communicating with you about mediation. And this is off the back of the recommendations made by the chair of the grievance hearing. I am very confused as to why you've suggested that I've been actually attending coaching sessions with the mediator, and why I'm being offered more coaching sessions. And can you tell me what it is that I'm being coached on? She said, all of a sudden, oh, I don't know, because obviously these sessions are all confidential, like really. And so would you like me to put you in touch with the mediator, and should I give her your details? And I said, oh, yes, please. Weeks go by, I haven't heard anything. So this is now October. I get an email back to say the mediator is on leave, but she'll get back to you shortly. So last week I got an email from the mediator to say, explaining what these coaching sessions would be. And all of a sudden she's saying, well, it's often when people have been away from the organisation for a long time, things have changed quite a bit. So as part of your reintegration into the team, I'm proposing some coaching sessions to help you navigate the organisation, because things could have changed quite a bit in that year. And these are all things that I said to her when I met with her. And also that you can help talk through issues that you might be encountering and how you might handle them. So the subtext of this is that they're lying, being deceptive, and not telling me why they're not doing the mediation. In other words, people don't want to go ahead, and switching up the narrative to say that the issue is with me. And part of what she had done beforehand is said that she could interview other people in the unit who wouldn't be formally part of the mediation, which was not said to me. So I raised that matter with HR, and they said, oh, they didn't know about this, and they would speak to her. And needless to say, that little bit of nonsense went away, because that sounded suspiciously to me like an investigation, which I just don't understand what would be the purpose for the mediator, and how the organisation could be protecting my rights when they're going around having conversations with me about me to people who clearly have already been inappropriate, which is why they got named in the grievance. However, the organisation made the decision, or the management made the decision, not to include them in the mediation. So anyway, I emailed her back today and just copied in HR, because this charade of pretending that they're keeping these conversations confidential, and clearly it's not. And said, made just a very factual statement back. The mediation was proposed by the chair of the grievance panel to address, rebuild the relationships across the team between all of those named in the grievance who contributed to the reason for why the grievance was brought in the first place. And in terms of my reintegration into the team, before I returned to the organisation, I did request that management put in place a plan to reintegrate me back into the team. That was prior to my return last July. The decision was made not to, and I left it there. Deception. I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Wow. Master deceivers. Words are super important. Coaching, mediation. Very important. Just that change of wording. The word confidential, because that's come up a couple times tonight as well. I think just counter racist logic. Non-white people should just automatically assume that nothing you say in a workplace environment is confidential. Nothing you say, nothing you do is confidential. That whites, I've said that for years. They are the masters of networking. And primarily networking about Negroes. So we should already know worldwide, London, Los Angeles, Liverpool, wherever you happen to be at. If it's individuals classified as white, that is their primary activity. Talking about Negroes on the job. So, of course, they're going to be chatting it up. Oh, she said this. Oh, she didn't want to do that. Oh, that is exactly what they're going to be doing. So none of us should be, you know, stunned about that. Even if they put it on the racial classification form that I read earlier, that, you know, this is confidential, and I certainly would not, you know, think that. Words are important. I did hear the term fair enough. We should be watching that word fair. The term janky, Thomason, New York, used earlier. I found several definitions for the term janky. Unresponsive, talking about software or computer program or application, sluggish, of poor quality or unreliable. It can be used for someone considered undesirable in some way. That one especially stood out to me as there seems like there's some racial element, but I did not find anything that explicitly was like, oh yeah, this is a term that has been used in a racialized way, but just something about the term to me resonated like, this seems like something that would be reserved for talking about undesirable non-white people. I could be totally incorrect. As we proceed, other folks can give their thoughts on the term janky, since that was discussed earlier. The male caller who spoke up simultaneously with Stacy. I think I've said this before. There is a short window. The time difference is normally 8 hours. There's a very short window when the UK, they change time before we do. I think it's like a week or 2 weeks where it's no longer an 8 hour time difference. It's a 7 hour time difference between myself and Stacy. And I thought, oh, I think it's now. And I almost said it. I would have been so cool, but oh well. The male caller who dialed in and yielded to Stacy. Line should be open, sir.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
How you doing? Good to all the callers. I've been listening for a while. This is actually my first time. I've called in, but it's my first time speaking. But I'm in the area of Central Florida, or in the plantation of Central Florida, and I want to share a story or two from my plantation. I spent some time in the military, and I was a firefighter as well, but this is probably probably the most, I guess you say, racist place I've ever worked at. A couple of weeks ago, probably about a month ago, and it's funny too, because the company I work for, they're supposed to be, you know, a good, wholesome Christian company. And at my job, I work with a lot of paint. It was really called gel coat because I work on boats. I paint boats. So I had spilled some paint or some gel coat and another coat with this area of another victim, a black male. So I was cleaning it up, and one of the guys who worked there, or the white male, probably in his 60s, he comes over and he's like, hey, you spilt some area, and let's say the black victim, his name, let's say his name is Joseph. Hey, you spilled some paint in Joseph area. I'm like, yeah, I spilled some paint and whatnot. He's like, yeah, well, you spilled paint in his area, so you got to clean it up. I say, yeah, it's my paint. You know, so then he's like, well, you know, I guess everyone needs a black bitch. Excuse my language, but that's what he says. He's like, well, I guess everyone needs a black bitch. And then he laughs and walks off. And I just kind of stood there for a minute, like, you know, I didn't know what to say, but, you know, what really could I say? And another instance was, this is actually my boss. He comes up to me and he was like, you know, I always knew why I didn't like gingers. So he shows me a meme. And it's a picture of a white female, a redheaded female, and it had the word gingers on it. And it had some words underneath it. And he said, oh, don't pay attention to those words. Just read the word gingers, and you'll see why I don't like gingers. And it took me like a quick second. And I realized that gingers has the same letters as the word niggers. So his entire joke the rest of the day was, I can't stand those gingers. I can't stand those gingers. But, you know, he was really meaning, I can't stand those niggers. And it's just one way I found to try to, you know, I guess someone neutralize the racism at work is I really don't deal with any other white people at my job besides talking directly to my boss. I mean, and even that sometimes is very, very challenging, you know, racist man, racist woman. But, you know, as far as other white people, I just try to avoid them completely. I come on the plantation, do what I have to do, and I leave. You know, it's just. And I've also noticed that since I've, you know, been, you know, listening to you guys and reading Mr. Fuller's book and read Dr. Francis Crutchfield's book, you know, I notice now when I go out into the world, you know, I go to bars and stuff to watch football games, you know, I completely ignore white people 100%. I don't pay them any mind. I look, they're not even there. But I've noticed the more that I've done that, they seem to want to gravitate to me more. You know, they're always trying to talk to me or trying to make conversation about games, and I try to be shallow and short without being, you know, straightforward, rude, but I don't know if, I guess, you know, they know what's better than we know them, or, I mean, they know what's better than we know ourselves, so I guess they kind of can see, you know, which victims may be less confused, and they're always picking my brain, want to know what I do, and this is just, white people, man, it's just, oh, man, it's crazy, just, you know, and hearing what some of the other callers have is just, what I have to say is, it's almost never ending, you know, it's always something, you know, here on the plantation and living in the world of white supremacy. But that's all I really had, guys. I'm mute my line.
Appreciate it. First time caller. I hope the program has been, continues to be worthy of your time and energy. Racist jokes. Talked about that for years, I think, all the way back to when we first came on the air. Racist jokes and how integral they are to the maintenance of white supremacy. Really, the transfer of information about racism, white supremacy. I always encourage, that's a great time if you have your recorder on the job. Boop. Record the earlier comment when he said, oh, everyone needs a BITCH. Boop, break out your recorder. You can write that down. Always an advocate of recording. That way you don't get the emotional response, because generally that's what they want. They want the chimp out. They want us to react and get angry, get mad. That makes their day. See us get all riled up. What generally stops that is the non-response or as a, oh, could you repeat that? And then you just take out, you could just take out your pad and write it down. Gingers. You know, like, okay, got it. No problem. Mm-hmm. Or even the first comment, just, oh, okay, let me repeat that. Everyone needs a, mm-hmm. Okay, anything else? Okay, I'll go back to getting up my gel coat here. That is what I've seen stops that almost every time when you don't respond, and particularly when they say like, "Oh wow, this nigga right here, like we're gonna have to watch this one. This is a special one. We're gonna have to study," because that's generally what they do under all circumstances. Let's see, other folks who dialed in that we have not heard from at all. If you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed. Oh, I did want to say, I definitely do not recommend the bar setting. I know that was mentioned. I know Dr. Francis Cress Welsing certainly would not recommend being in a bar. And if you are going to be there, I definitely would not recommend ignoring whites. I would say be extremely mindful of them. I think one thing Gus has been known to say once or 50 times over the last decade is one of the worst combinations in the known universe is whites and alcohol. So if you are going to be in that environment, ball game or otherwise, I would definitely be alert and mindful about the whites that are around you to see what they're doing and how they, you know, they could be Voltroning at any moment to terrorize and attack you. They can ruin your life in 30 seconds. So I would definitely be aware of what they're doing if you're going to be in that environment, which is not recommended at all. Others who dialed in with a hand up, if we've not heard from you, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. I guess different for being on a Friday night, so I had to remember, wait a minute, this is workplace racism tonight. So am I correct, workplace racism?
You are correct.
All right. And so I wanted to share just something real quick. My daughter came home today and told me about something that happened at school. School is the workplace for kids, right? So she and our partner, who is a Hispanic young lady as well, Hispanic, she's black, my daughter's black, they were working on a project, and the project had to be due by a certain time, and so they completed their project, and one of the other teachers, who's over another different group that deals with different level of competitions among the different schools and all, he took the project and took all their research and all, and basically claimed the project as her group's, and put her group's name on the project, and made up flyers and everything. And my daughter was really just like baffled, like, I can't believe that she just did that, you know. So she told the other teacher, one of the other teachers, about it, and the teacher said that she would talk to the principal and the other teacher that did, you know, take their all their research and all, and claim it for her group here. But I had, you know, once she told me about it, I said, oh no, I'm not going to sit back and tolerate that. She doesn't want me to say anything. And that's generally the take that my kids give me. You know, they don't want me to make mention of something when something happens at school. But I'm just at the point where, you know, obviously I'm not going to do anything crazy, but, you know, having a calm conversation with, I'd love to talk with that particular teacher, but definitely I've had conversations in the past about, or with the principal. And I'm the one I called, this probably goes back about a year ago, the one I called about and mentioned about the email that was sent, a really hate-filled, prejudice or racist email that was sent to one of the teachers, hacked in by other students, supposedly coming from another teacher. But it was really hateful words that were shared about black people and black teachers and so on. But it's the same school. Same school. So just wanted to share that. And also wanted to share something else real quick. I've been coming in a little bit early lately on my job, and this particular morning, just this week, as I was going to the break room, I'm walking through the halls, and the cubicles are kind of high, so you can't really see who's coming around the corner. And as I was coming across kind of like an intersection, there was one racial suspect who's said things to me before, such as, you know, regarding my hair length and so on. And when I questioned him about that, that stopped that activity. He's never said anything else to me about my hair. But anyway, as I came across and almost bumped into him, I kind of like, oh, you know, he says, so he said right away, did I scare you? And, you know, it didn't really dawn on me at first, but after listening to some of the other people who have commented before about how racist suspects like to scare black people, you know, it just made me think right away, I wonder if he, you know, really wanted to scare me, you know? But it just kind of struck me as odd that he said that specifically, did I scare you? You know, but that's pretty much it. I just wanted to share those couple things there.
Much obliged. The work, the school is the workplace, if certainly for children and, you know, even for a lot of older folks who are in school, college, whatever it is, training of whatever variety, that is definitely the workplace. And that is standard operating procedure. Racists stealing intellectual property and the hard labor of non-white people. They've been doing that. That's all the way. Edward Baptist, the half has never been told, long time that they've been doing that, even with young children. In fact, I can even think of, it's a number of non-white students that I'm aware of where they've done, sometimes they had to do experiments or labs that they had to write up, and the professor stole their work, took credit for it. Like I can think of multiple, in fact, non-white students now that I'm thinking about it, where teachers have done something similar, taking their work and taking credit for it, or in some way not honoring the student, the non-white student who did the work. Not surprising about your daughter's response either. I think a lot of folks just, you know, want to try to not cause any trouble. And plus she's, I mean, the whole power dynamic of that with the adult and a younger person, and then this person controlling, you know, having control over what's going to happen with their academic career at this point. Like it's a whole lot of logics in terms of why a lot of victims have that response where we just want to try and get through it without causing any problems, without rocking the boat, as they say. Let's just try and, you know, get through this as painlessly as possible. Other folks who dialed in, much obliged for sharing, sir. Other folks who dialed in, we've had back-to-back, Stacy in the UK as well. Very important to have these conversations with your offspring. If they're not already in the workplace, they will be shortly, and school is the workplace. So definitely make sure that you're having these conversations with and around your offspring. Others that we've not heard from, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida, courthouse. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I had a few incidents I wanted to share, especially with the tackiness of the Halloween festivities. I had a conversation. My first one was there was a lot of images being shown of what kind of pictures or what kind of food dishes that was being prepared, or the ideas that were thought of being made. Like they were talking about making a mummy meatloaf and wrapping bacon around it. I don't know, maybe this could go into the Dr. Wells scenario, to use a metaphor, because it's browning a lot of meats, things like that. And one particular was this lady was saying that she went to Walmart and she was thinking of purchasing brownies. She used brownies, because you're supposed to make food scary. And she said she was thinking of buying some white chips and putting a black speckle on the white chip, chocolate chip, and putting it on a brownie. And she said she forgot to buy some food coloring of a certain color, because when she mixed it, the ones that she brought or got from the store, and she was trying to make it black, but it turned out a dark blue. So yes, like the color association was maximum, majorly racist. And there was another observation where, because I think I shared on the program that I mentioned the word spook to the supervisor, and how that obviously connects to the word spooky and scary and creepy being used for Halloween. So what was interesting about this was that there was a flyer, you know, like a flyer for where it's showing where an event is going to happen, and they were going to have this luncheon. So the flyer says spooktacular. Spooktacular. Now, I know, like after I shared this term, and there was a committee that was formed with mostly white people, and they put a non-white or black female on there. So I'm wondering, how did the word spook get onto this flyer? So they had it decorated. They had them in different colors all over the courthouse. And what was interesting was that, and what brings me on to my next one, was that there was an email that was sent out on Tuesday evening before we left. And it was basically saying, thank you all for all the participation, and remember to wear your costumes tomorrow, and make sure it's tasteful, or whatever the term was, and it doesn't offend anyone, because you'll be immediately asked to change if it doesn't meet our requirements, blah, blah, blah. So now I already said that I didn't want to participate. Okay. And in the email where the warden typed out, it says it's starting to look spooky around here. One thing that stood out was the word spooky was in quotes. Like, it, you know, the single word was in quotes, spooky. So I forwarded that email to my personal email, and I think that was a major act of racism. And my mother agreed with it. She said it seemed like they were calling black people spooks or whatever. Okay, so basically after that, no black person participated on this past Wednesday. So, you know, I was very glad to know that this didn't occur, because there was two black females that their supervisor sent out a nasty email about both of them. And this was one of the blunders, I guess, of the white supervisor, where she was exchanging messages with another white supervisor about a black employee. And she replied, send all, and messed around and sent it to everybody. So I don't know necessarily what was on that email about that black female, but the other black female, this white woman, she sent the image out with the dog on it covered in filth and flies, internet meme, replying to her saying, well, what kind of friends are these that you have? And she put that picture on the email. So I never really got the update as to what she did about this. But I can tell that there's going to be a conversation about the issue of racism. And I'm getting a lot of white people trying to offer me food and trying to find a way to minimize me from speaking. Even, and I end with this, we usually have a meeting the first Friday of every month. And what I notice is that I'm having the next Friday off. I'll be off next Friday. So I get an email, or we all get an email, where it's a message saying that Well, due to the homecoming parade for, you know, University of Florida and certain staff being out, we won't be able to have the meeting, which was supposed to be this morning. So it's supposed to be next Friday, which is the same Friday that I'm off. So I think that was done because they probably didn't want me to hear this information. So I wanted to share that because it's a lot going on with racism. And I think they know that I'm obviously less confused given all of the events this year. And there'll be a lot more to come. And thanks for allowing me to share.
I would say much obliged for sharing, sir. I'm sure given the different examples that you've talked about where you spoke up when they were when they did not offer the public greeting for the new black hiree. I think it was a black female way back at the beginning of the year. I think it might have been the warden who neglected her. Asking questions about the racial classification. I mentioned that before. Asking the question, and if a person calls in and gives a racist joke over the phone, what was it? The Black and Decker pecker wrecker. How should one respond? I suspect they would say, oh, yes, we would prefer to not have the Negro here present for the meeting so he can add that to his file and ask us a bunch of other questions about this situation. Didn't you all have the situation that was a black supervisor? They came and he had like letters out in front of his office and they came and rearranged the letters in front of his office. Wasn't that a recent one too?
Oh yes, that was okay. So I have an area downstairs. That was a desk where they had these letters. And it was a white person that this guy works with. He's been named an assistant supervisor, and he's going to be the supervisor when the current one retires. So he spelled out boss in the person's name. So what that image is the result of somebody, I don't know who it was, they went down and they made some kind of anagram, and they switched, they put N-O, top of boss, so it will spell out no boss. I think that's what it spelled out. Is that what it spelled out, right?
I believe so. I think I got a picture of this one as well. That's what I recollect. Standard operating procedure and pattern of attacking non-white people on the jobs, the band. That's what I just said about Stacey's situation. Like, they network, the primary conversation is they're talking about the niggers. Exactly what he said about the emails about these black females on the job. And maybe that's going to be, you know, some of what's talked about at the meeting that you're strangely going to be excluded from. But that's the stand. That's the thing that they're always talking about. What are we going to do with these niggers? What do we think about the niggers? Aren't you upset about these niggers getting, nigger over here got a new desk and this one is about to be promoted? I mean, that's what they're talking about all the time. What are we going to do about all this? Can we figure out a way to get them fired or to get fewer of them here? Can we get in? I thought we were supposed to be hiring more white women. We sent around the thing anyway. We shouldn't even have all these niggers in the building at the courthouse, no less. That's what they're talking about. Other folks, if you have commentary on what has been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, yes, ma'am. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Good evening. I was just calling in to... it's been a while since I've been able to call in. Just to do a follow-up, one of the callers from Florida, and I had some had been experiencing a lot of stuff on the job here. I had just recently got back in town from visiting my father because he's ill. He's been going through radiation therapy. And so I had just gotten back in town, and basically, to make a long story short, after I returned from my trip, I had to, you know, I reported back to work, and there was already an issue going on with me and the pharmacy manager earlier at the beginning of the year when the whole situation as far as the use of the N-word or saying nigger on the job in reference to me and just, you know, blatantly saying it when no one else is saying it. I've never used it on the job. But nonetheless, it was being blatantly used. And when it came up and I, she wanted me to share as far as the initial issues that was going on, she tried to justify it by stating that it was technically the person in question who was using the definition or using the term was using it correctly because it's in the dictionary and that hadn't I heard of white niggers and black niggers. And so because of that exchange, I had already expressed that I didn't feel comfortable in going in the pharmacy department with her because of her views. So I limited my interaction with her only to when I needed, whenever I got called and I had to help take care of stuff and transactions back there. So a few weeks before I had left to go visit my father, basically she tried to, in essence, corner me in the break room and ask me personally, had she done anything to upset me because I've been very, quote, short with her. And I didn't feel comfortable in talking because I didn't have my phone on me because I normally record everything. And so I just quickly, once I realized I didn't have my phone on me, I just went on ahead and told her, hey, Stephanie, I don't think this is a good time to talk right now. I really don't feel comfortable in having this conversation with you right now. But then her response was, well, I did do something to you. And I said, Stephanie, I'm not going to have this conversation with you right now. We're just going to leave it at that. And I walked out. And I had a witness to this. And so fast forward to me getting back into town, she basically wanted to make an issue that morning about me not putting in the registers before opening pharmacy, when normally pharmacists get the registers from the office like they've been doing for several years now. They don't have an official cash handling procedure like I had going on in New Orleans when I was working out there. So this is what we've been doing all along. It's never been a problem, never been reported, this, that, and the other. For whatever reason, whenever she comes into work, she wants me to physically get the registers for her when they're sitting on the counter for her and her team to go ahead and get and put in the drawers. I don't know what it was. I didn't care. But when she paged for me to go to pharmacy to put the registers in, she knew that the manager, the store manager, was already there. She didn't know where I was standing, was right next to the pharmacy window, so I immediately turned on my phone and stepped over to the window and just said, because she said it over the intercom very nasty. Everybody was trying to figure out what was going on. And I said, hey, Stephanie, I'd appreciate it. You have your pharmacy technicians. When they clock in, they turn right around and just pick up the registers right then and there. There's no need for me to be bringing you your registers. You don't do that with anybody else. And she she was like, well, I don't have a problem with anybody else but you. So she said this in front of people. So I said, okay. I said, well, I'm tired of your racism at this point. And so that's when she just got all, you know, because like I said, I've just been going through a lot, like I said, dealing with stuff going on with my dad. My mom's brother just got killed, so tragically. So my patience with white people is not even existent. I don't even care anymore. So after I said that, she was like, well, is Mark here? And I said, sure, call him. So he's running out of office with the registers, and he's asking me to help. And I said, no, you put those registers in, and we go back to the office to talk about this, because I'm going to go ahead and call corporate and let them know about this exchange. I said, because she's the last person that needs to talk to me, because she made the statement saying that I'm being unprofessional. And I said, you're the last person to talk to me about being unprofessional. You refer to black people as niggers. And you talk to customers discourteously and stuff, and I'm just not going to take it. So he was trying to get me to come back there and do whatever. I told him, absolutely not. Go ahead and do what you need to do, and let's go to this office, because we're going to go ahead and squash this right now. And so he eventually finished putting in the registers, and we head to the back office. And I just pretty much let them know where I stood with all of this, and just told them I'm just tired of them discriminating against me. I feel that ever since I've reported this incident to you guys, instead of going after the individuals, you guys have singled me out and made me the problem. I'm the one that had my tire slashed by somebody that you guys didn't even do proper background check on, never got compensated for it. You guys came after me over that, and it's just been on and on and on. And I'm just not going to tolerate it. So after that weekend, I worked. I was off a few days last week, Monday and Tuesday. So when I got back to work Wednesday, but by then I had already talked to my dad, and he was just like, call it quits, go ahead and, because of what he's going through right now, he needs me up in Virginia for business, and just told me, just screw it, try and see if you get a transfer. If not, don't worry about it. Just try and move on, and we'll have things set up in Virginia with his company and stuff. So he just wanted me to get out of the environment of constantly having to go in, battling with them over this stuff going on in the store. So I went on ahead and drew up my FMLA paperwork, because I had already been in contact with corporate. They were already aware of the incident in reference to the pharmacy manager. And ever since I've been in communication with corporate for the past several weeks now, in regards to what this, both the store manager and the assistant store manager have been doing, they've since retaliated against me by giving me a low score on my performance review. So now that's impacting me being able to even transfer at this point, because even when I go to put in my information on our company website to do the request, that's the first thing that they ask. So by the time I got back Wednesday, I had dropped off the paperwork Tuesday evening, because I thought he was going to be there, because I thought the DM was going to be there, because he had it on the calendar. So afterwards, I went on ahead and dropped the paper off. He tried to text me Wednesday, asking me questions about it. But, you know, I was telling him whatever, because I was already on the phone with corporate explaining to them, you know, I had already faxed over the initial paperwork. And by the time I got into the office, he basically was trying to grill me on as to why I wanted to go out on FMLA, and I'm still obligated to work these 5 days. And I was just like, no, not really. If you go out on FMLA, I mean, that's on y'all. Y'all can do whatever y'all want. I'm out. So you could go ahead and make Wednesday would have been my last day. But I tried to be nice towards the end and say, well, I'll tell you what, if it's going to help you out, I can work until Friday. And afterwards, you know, hey, y'all do what y'all got to do. So technically my last day was Friday. But when initially, after I had my exchange with him Wednesday about my FMLA paperwork, when I came in that day, like I said, usually when I first come in, within that first hour, I have my phone on record. I had since put 2 terabytes on my phone, so I'm constantly recording stuff and sending it to my thing. So this time around, when I stepped out of the office, I had already had my phone on charge, and I didn't think it was going to record, but I had it flipped over. And it basically captured them immediately after I left the office just talking trash about me. They referred to me as a cancer, which was interesting because he already knows my dad is going through radiation treatment. And that's the word that you want to use to describe me. And you also, you know, but I'm a cancer to the store, apparently, in their eyes, because I'm not willing to lie down and just let them run amok over me or, you know, continue to discriminate against me. But it just showed their callousness and how it also captured him calling the DM and basically just telling her all these lies about me. And it just gave you a real insight to just what white people say behind closed doors, pretty much. But it was very nasty. And like I said, I had shared it with my dad, and he was just like, yeah, it's time to go. So as of now, like I said, I'm on my FMLA. I'm technically still with the company. If I'm able to eventually transfer, that's great. If not, I already have a job lined up. So really, it's just, you know, just buying myself time. And when I feel like I want to contact them again and let them know whether or not I'm going to continue being with the company or not, I'll do that when it suits me. But I just have to be in place for trying to help take over some things with my dad's company right now. Other than that, that's it.
Well, first and foremost, I'm just stunned and saddened to hear about the loss of your brother. My condolences.
My mom's brother, my uncle.
Mom's brother. Thank you for the clarification. Your uncle, your mother, family have our condolences. Certainly that's in addition to dealing with your father's illness. I hope he has a speedy recovery. Wish him the best out in the great state of Virginia, and you going to help him. That's grand as well. I think in terms of your workplace situation, using your record, I think many folks have, you know, made the recorder a standard part of their practice to try to defend themselves on the job and to just have evidence when these type of things are being said on the job. I think with your situation, with some of what you've been reporting, you've been sticking, you know, pretty solidly to your code. I certainly would encourage listeners about not making accusations of racism on the job. Just it's been my experience. It's very difficult to prove. And the burden of proof immediately shifts to you to show that they are being racist. And generally, in a system of white supremacy, they make it impossible for a black person to say, oh, yeah, you've proved
beyond reason that this white person was practicing racism, regardless of what, you know, the crime is. They generally say, oh, no, I don't think it's racism. He might have, you know, lynched a few niggers. Hell, who hasn't? But racist? I'm just. But beyond that, and I mean, you already said you had just had enough. Beyond that, I think I'm just so pleased that you're at a spot where you can just say, hey, I'm going to take care of my father as best I can and get time away from all of this, because it's just been one incident of terrorism after another with a variety of different employees. And I've talked before, I think we've talked before, when you're in these really, this is beyond toxic. I mean, just it's just total terrorism. And it's been non-white people who have mistreated you and abused you in this situation. It's been whites, everyone. When you're in a situation like that, and I mean, if this is not something where, yeah, this is, you know, like a career situation for me, this is a spot where I'm well taken care of, I'm advancing, I'm learning things, I'm excited about what I'm doing. If that's not the case, then, hey, I should not be hanging out here for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, even 1 year. I really should be trying to get into a better situation for myself. So and you said you already batting 1,000 on this and already got another job situation set up, and you can kind of pick when you've taken care of your dad and he's doing great. If I want to go back, fine. If not, no problem there. Already got something else lined up. That is spectacular. Just I would encourage more folks to make sure that we do as much as we can to not get kind of sucked into those situations that are really, really toxic. And maybe this is just something that we were doing to tide us over until a better opportunity comes along, and we end up being there for a long time. And just a lot of other really non-constructive things can happen when you end up getting bogged down in these just really poisonous terrorist environments that racists create for us on the job. So I'm glad you're out. Again, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother's brother, your uncle, and wishing the best for your father. Others who dialed in, if you have questions or comments on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation that you want to discuss, if we've missed you completely, line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi. This is B.S. Ronan. I'm calling from New York. I listened to the program, the archive podcast on YouTube often, most of the time, a lot. I called in once before, and I mentioned that I work in an environment that is almost totally non-white people. So it's pretty productive. And I was like, you know, pretty much it's one of the best, if not the best environment I've ever worked in. Well, I would like to add on to that with there are issues. It took some time. I've been there for about 6 months now. It took some time, but there are issues. Because being in a system of white supremacy that we are in, a lot of others have issues and baggage. We all have VGQ. So we all have our issues that we come with and we bring to the table. Nothing is drastic. I mean, I wouldn't trade this for any other prior environments that I worked in for the world. I wouldn't, you know, nothing too drastic. But however, there's jockeying for position. And this has to do with employment, but it's something that I always want to bring up, but I rarely ever get the chance to. And that is that in my field, I work in the technology field, desktop, system analyst, engineering, things like that. And prior to the stock market crash, it was an area that was very lucrative for a lot of black men. I have many of my friends work in this area. But during the presidency of Barack Obama, he put forth a lot of visas. I think the H1N1 visas, and that brought in a lot of Indians over into the field, flooded the market, and just brought the pay rates down and pushed a lot of brothers out. So that seems to be a problem. That was a problem for employment. Everything turned to contractors. There was no longer steady work, and everything turned to contractors. So in a prior position, I worked with a lot I worked underneath a lot of Pakistani, Indian type of other people in the technology field. Now, in this new position I was brought on to by a brother, a Trinidadian brother, and he brought me on. And I swear, now that I look hindsight, 2020, I can see that he definitely brought me on more than likely because I'm black. And he brought on another worker who's also black. And he pretty much flooded it he surrounded himself with brothers. Kind of, I don't know if this is a metaphor, he inoculated himself. Would that be a metaphor?
Definitely.
I don't want to say, I can't say covered himself. He pretty much surrounded himself with brothers so that he wouldn't be able to be outmaneuvered. Is that a metaphor too? Secured his position. And now it turns out that he was now there's a white guy who was promoted over him. He was actually, his title is underneath him, but now he's now our new boss. So the only thing in the transition is that he actually is under my boss, but the transition is necessary for him to get a raise and a promotion, and then he'll become my boss's boss. But I digress. The major issue is that when we're on a project and I ran into a lot of the Pakistan and Indian brothers who I worked with on a prior project, and they all assumed that I was there as a contractor because that's kind of what many other brothers were relegated to. And it was really to their surprise that I actually was a permanent staff thanks to the brother who put me in this position here. So even though it seems that it appears that I'm not as directly impacted by white supremacy as normal, you're still inside of the system of it. So it still affects you. So, sorry if I rambled on, but that's all I wanted to say. I'll mute my line.
Global system. You can find some locations that, are maybe have slightly better resources or slightly, I guess, more enjoyable, more productive, whatever metric you want to use for whatever reason. But I mean, we are still in the system. That's why even when I'm gloating about the wonders of Seattle, I generally say it is the best plantation. I say that for a reason. I also wanted to say, I only say the compensatory call-in. That's the only broadcast where I request that we not use metaphors. However, I do appreciate greatly listeners making an effort to be more, what is it, dropping their pennies to think about when they're going to use these metaphors. I think that is important, and especially to make sure that we're able to, explicitly explain what's happening. It shouldn't just be that the metaphor is the only way that we can describe what's happening. We should be able to speak directly to what's taking place, which I think you were able to do, sir. Just took some thinking, which that is required of all of us every day. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a question, even though that is an interesting strategy to hire a lot of black people to keep from, I guess, having race soldiers or others come in and manipulate how, if you're going to get a promotion and that sort of thing, what's going to happen with other folks that are working there. Let's see, other folks who dialed in that we have missed completely. If you dialed in with a hand up and we've not heard from you at all, if you have commentary, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers and listeners. I came in on the broadcast late, so I didn't hear all the commentary. So I didn't know if there were any outstanding questions this evening. Were there, Gus?
Let's see. I know I asked Thomas in New York, used the term chanky, and I said that I thought that term had some racial connotations. I looked it up. The definition didn't have anything explicit about racism, but I did ask if folks had any thoughts about use of the term janky. Were there any other questions? I'm not thinking of any other. Oh, I guess I did ask if folks either the Halloween holiday came up as an issue on the job, or the people that are in areas where they're having important midterms, if that's generating any conversation on the job as well. Other than that, I can't think of any questions that were raised.
Okay. In response to the word janky, I don't know, so I won't comment on that. As far as Halloween goes, didn't really have anything going on at the job. There's one manager who always seems to dress up in these very outlandish outfits every year. This year he was Luigi from Super Mario Brothers, so that was interesting, but I only saw him briefly. As a side note, they used to, at the job that I have, they used to decorate the floors every year for Halloween, and one year apparently they decorated the basement in the theme of Lost, and then everybody dressed up as a character from Lost. I was not working at this company at that time, but I always wondered, there were a couple of non-white characters on that show that had pretty prominent roles, and I always wondered if somebody decided to dress up like one of them, considering that there are very few non-white people at the company that I work at. So that brings me to a couple of observations that I had over this past week. So there's a gentleman, he works as a janitor with the company, or he worked as a janitor with the company. He's been working there for about 14 years, and he's a nice guy, but he's overly friendly with white people. You know, he seeks white validation, you know, just like a lot of us do. And they decided to, when the company was bought out by this larger company, the larger company decided to get rid of, they decided to use a third-party cleaning company for the janitorial staff and get rid of, or, you know, shorten the hours of the janitorial staff that's already there, which is actually predominantly Black. And they decided to take away the vacation and the benefits of the janitorial staff that stayed on, and the janitorial staff had to reapply for their job. And he decided that, well, he did reapply, and he did not get the day shift due to seniority, so he decided to move on. And so this week, apparently, one of the suspected racists at my job decided that I wanted to get him a cake. And so, you know, I chipped in for this one. I don't typically chip in, but I will chip in for a Black or non-white employee, so I did. And today we had the cake, and there's two suspected racists. And this is why I don't eat anything at my job, and why I encourage other people not to eat things at their job. But there were two suspected racists getting this cake together and cutting it and putting it on plates, and they were touching the cake. And I there's about six Black females. There's six Black people, period, that work in my company, all Black females. And three of us were downstairs, and we were watching this, and we all decided that we were not going to get a piece of this cake anyway, so we just kept watching it, and one of them licked their fingers, one of the white females licked their fingers, and then went back to touching and cutting this cake, and then a fourth Black female came downstairs, and before we could grab her, she went and grabbed a piece of cake, and we were just like, I wouldn't eat that if I were you, you know. But, I really recommend not getting things to eat from that were at your job. So this black male, these white people came down. They were pretty dismissive of him, but he was just so excited that they bought him this cake and everything. And, me and the other black females gave him a hug, and then we kind of left because we knew, that really the important people to him were the white people, So that's unfortunate, but, for all of the things that he did, he was just so friendly and everything, he still lost his job. And so that's really, I think a lot of times black people are not codified, or non-white people are not codified, because we think being friendly or being subservient or what have you to white people is going to help us or going to save us from mistreatment or anything, and it doesn't. So out of the six black people at my job, one is an intern. Actually, we have a black female who's an intern in our business intelligence department, and she's slated to graduate in December. And so I was talking to her, and I asked her if they were going to make her an offer, and she said that she had been talking to someone the day before, and they said they didn't have they didn't know if they had enough in the budget, and so they didn't know if they could do that or not. And meanwhile, we're being told that the company is expanding and that they're looking to hire more people. And there are two other interns that are non-black. One is non-black, non-white. The other one is white, who they've been talking about giving offers to. And the BI team is like two people. So I think they could probably use another person, but they have told her this. I suspect that she was there to replace somebody, another black person, if they leave, primarily me, because for a while, of course, they were stalking my LinkedIn and everything. I guess they want to keep their quota together. That's all I have to share tonight. I will mute my line. Thanks so much.
Much obliged. That is... They lie to black people on a pretty regular basis. We just don't have the money to bring you on. We sure would like to have you as a part of our family. And then they'll go, right, oh, we're giving everybody a new raise. Everybody's getting a bonus. Absolutely. Woo! But yeah, we don't have enough money to hire any of the new NICRAs. The black male that was seeking white validation, he was probably feverish. That was the first thought that came to mind, but that is standard, I think, seeking that it's standard both in terms of seeking white validation on the job and elsewhere, and the licking of the fingers and totally unsanitary practices with the food. The whole time I was saying, Cesar Sayoc, he worked at the pizza restaurant. He was a delivery driver. He worked at the pizza restaurant. He very easily could have worked at the bakery that put that cake together. I mean, just keeping that in mind in general. But certainly, anytime that there's any sort of functions on the job, I've said that consistently, I would make it a habit of not eating. Whatever excuse you need to come up with. I got gluten problems. I got food allergies. I'm dieting. I'm vegan. I'm lactose intolerant. I'm fasting. Whatever it is, I'm doing the keto diet. Whatever excuse you got to come up with, I'll die if a peanut hits my lips. I can't do it. I just can't do it. Leave it alone. It's not something that you want to mess with. Again, Cesar Sayoc, he worked at the pizza company where he bragged about his love of Adolf Hitler. Much less the licking of the hands and how many of them love dogs and all of that. I'm just not an advocate of eating on the job, and protect your own food. We've had enough folks who've dialed in about that as well. And securing your own food to make sure that it is not being tampered with while you are on the job. That's it. Other folks who dialed in, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Others, if anybody that we missed completely has a hand up that we've not heard from at all. Got everybody. grand. If other folks have commentary, if you have additional comments, questions, feel free. Certainly, if other folks are listening and you have a comment or suggestion on what's been shared, feel free to share also. I saw Thomas in New York mailed the question, make sure we get all of our Halloween commentary. So the photograph, this, it looks like two suspected racists, white man, white woman, if I was, you know, going to take a gander. And one of them at least has on a dashiki, maybe a medal or two. And then the white woman looks like she might have on a dashiki or something close to it as well. Were they trying to be black nationalists? Was that their Halloween costume? Or you might not be able to share with us, but that's what it looks like to me. Maybe they dressed up. They were going to be members of the Black Panther, or I don't know. But any excuse to mock black people will do. Break out our dashikis and be cool for the last day of October. Other folks who dialed in have commentary, questions?
I guess I have a question.
Let's see. We'll get the female caller first.
Yep, that's fine.
I did have a question about the clip that you shared at the beginning of the broadcast, where I guess the commentator was talking about, I think the caller from the UK had made mention of it too, because it was kind of confusing. I guess basically they were saying that black females that were more educated or had some type of degree, were they trying to basically say that they're able to, internalize the racism that they experience? So that's why it was, I guess, the findings they were showing that they were able to handle with the stresses more because of their education level.
If I understood the report correctly, it was the thesis was that the black females who had more education, even though they also experienced stress from racism, they were able to deal with it better, presumably because they had more education. So they had a better understanding of racism, and having that better understanding of racism is what allegedly allowed them to cope with it better so that they could have lower stress levels, whereas they were saying the black females that had less education, presumably they would encounter stress with racism, but would not understand that it was racism that was causing the stress. And so they would internalize it and say, oh, it's not racism. It must be something defective about me. And so they would have higher levels of stress. That was what the report was suggesting, I think. Does that make sense?
I would definitely have to disagree, because I guess my question would be, well, what is their definition of racism? Because you got educated people around, but they don't understand what racism, white supremacy is in actuality. So I don't know.
I suspect the data from that study is available to see if they have a definition for racism and more of the details about how they concluded that the black females with more education, that meant that they had a better grasp of racism. There might be data in the report specifically. So I'll see if I can share. Maybe we can track down the folks who did the study to ask them more detailed questions. Let's see, were you going to comment on that, Stacy, since you did raise a report saying that you also didn't agree with that assessment from the report?
I mean, the point is, it just doesn't make sense. I think the question about what is the definition of racism is a good one, but even with the definition, it still doesn't make any sense unless the definition is just, bears no relation to actually what we know as the definition for racism used on the cows. It doesn't make any sense to me. Can I add a couple more things, Gus?
I reckon. I will say briefly, since we're probably segueing from that topic, that I have seen data that whites have shown, allegedly, there is a correlation between the longer you stay in school, meaning like college, university and such, the longer that you stay in school, and the greater the likelihood that you will have sexual intercourse with a white person. I have seen that study. That's not me making up. I've seen that study. That right there would suggest to me that there is an inverse correlation between the longer you stay in school and your understanding of racism, white supremacy. I could be in error. Anywho, go ahead, Stacey.
I think one of the earlier callers, I believe, talked about his child's ideas being colonized, I'm going to use the word, by suspected racists. Similar thing happened to my daughter when she was at uni. She was on an enterprise program, so it's business support program, and they would give them grants, but obviously they have to pitch their ideas and demonstrate business plan. And one of the tutors was being really hostile to her. And then eventually she found out that he was mirroring her project. And I guess he's been hostile to interrogate her to get her business model so he could run off and steal her idea. So it happens on a regular basis. In terms of my codification, I'm still pleased and hovering at 95. I did get a little bit irritated about something today, which was to do with what I talked about last week, the response to the political questions that we are required to produce. There's an additional requirement to track any commitments made, so I was relaying it back to the team this morning in a team meeting. One of the racist suspects who was meddling the last time round started saying, well, there needs to be a process, because I'm basically saying every officer needs to retrospectively go back and look at all the questions that they've responded to for the year and track any commitments made and the progress. And that's a steer from the political office. It's not my request. I'm just coordinating the process. But obviously, the racist suspect male who used to lead the process, he never encountered any of this hostility before, but it just seems to be a major problem now that I'm involved in the process. And so she was challenging and coming up with her idea of a process for getting this done, which made absolutely no sense. And the non-white female, again, who I had unfortunately had to put in a grievance again, who was experiencing anti-blackness last week. Again, she's in the team meeting. I agree with the race soldier. She didn't use that term. I am. There needs to be a process. And the fact is I had outlined a process. And so what I did is at the end of the meeting, sent an email, said this is what it's going to be. Anybody who's got any other ideas, put your process forward by the end of the day. I'd already agreed the approach with my manager and I said I'm going to send out an email. But yeah, it's just ongoing hostility. But overall, I am hovering at 95. And one thing I would say in terms of what's worked for me, in terms of keeping on track, particularly around remaining serious in the workplace and just being conscious of what I'm saying, I guess it's probably been recommended on the cows before, but I really now consciously, before I open my mouth, there's a question that immediately comes into my head. Why are you going to say that? Or why are you going to speak to this person? So that even where, perhaps in the past I would have engaged in trivial conversation with people or felt the urge to crack a joke, and I didn't realize how much I did it until I've consciously edited myself. Why are you going to say that? Why are you speaking to this person? And so if I do speak, it's because it might be part of my codification. So I'm going to engage in some conversation with a potential race soldier just to demonstrate that I'm not being the hostile Negro. But I, you know, it really helps for me to ask myself a question up front, and it's become it's a habit now. I don't even do it consciously. So that's just one recommendation for people. But I'll mute my line there, guys.
Great suggestion. That seems like it would be a helpful way to kind of monitor what we're saying, just to make sure that we're not talking and saying words carelessly. That is not a habit that we want to be in on the job, speaking recklessly. The male caller who yielded the floor, much obliged for your patience, sir. Proceed.
Great, thank you. So a couple things. One is I wanted to say I'm taking an online class, and the class is on management. And one of the – so that's some questions, you know, as far as a workplace culture or organizational culture was one of the topics there. And then it kind of lists the different dimensions of the workplace culture. And as I'm reading through it, it's funny because after listening for a while of the cows, I'm kind of wanting to look back and say, well, shucks, they should list one of these cultures as a racist culture. because one of the questions that the instructor asked is that, as an employee, what are the two main important cultures would you list as important to you if you were to work at a company? And it lists different, again, in different dimensions there. And of course, racism isn't one of them. Racist culture is not one of them. But and then he asked a question about as a manager, you know, what's important to you of these dimensions? What's important to you? And one of the dimensions talks about being like a team, working in a team type culture. And I've mentioned that as being one of the things that's important to me. And then he came back and asked another question saying, okay, well, I'm glad that you mentioned it. I want to talk about this some more. But what would you do if you had a team member that was disruptive? How would you handle that? And so, you know, prior to listening to the cow, there wasn't, you know, I mentioned my own thoughts and views. But after listening to the couch for a while, my initial response was, well, first, I thoroughly familiarized myself with the policy of the company, of what the policy says about dealing with people who are disruptive. And then I would ask, you know, HR, their views of how to handle the situation. And then I'll ask other managers and so on. And then he came back, and I didn't know of his position at the time. He came back and says, well, that's great that you mentioned that as an HR, I forget if he says a manager or resource manager, something relating to HR. He says, that's really great. I would have answered the same way concerning the company's policy. So, you know, again, that's what I learned from listening to the cows. But one of the things I wanted to ask as a question to others, you know, if being in management and wanting to grow and climb that ladder and be more in a position where you earn higher pay, I'm finding it a little bit challenging to, you know, as you start to develop your code of how to deal with people, and specifically in a majority all-white environment, culture, I could even call that a culture, right, where there's only two blacks. And it's funny that Codified Software was speaking about having cake. And they just had cake the other day, celebrating the birthdays for the month. And it happened to be, you know, my month. And I didn't go. I didn't participate. I didn't even want to be bothered. But the challenge that I'm having is how to, you know, develop your code and deal with people. The majority of the people that's on your job are white, right? How do you fit into that culture and develop your code without really being too personal, without revealing a lot about yourself and family? Because the more you talk with people, the more, you know, people are going to be asking questions, and the more that you're going to be, potentially if you're going to want to move up in a management type position, then you've got to be, you've got to kind of fit that culture of the organization of being social, being friendly, being
outgoing, you know, the type of leadership that they want or are looking for in a company. They want that type of a person who's, you know, social, friendly, conversate with everyone, get along with everyone, being a team player, and the list goes on, right? But the more you start to see the racist culture, the more you don't want to be involved with sharing a lot of personal things or a lot of conversation that are not job related. But again, once you're there for a number of years and those years multiply, you know, it's almost kind of hard to not share things, you know? So I don't know if anyone else is in that kind of predicament. How do you deal with it? How do you be that social type person and move up in management, but still kind of keep your code, of dealing with white people? And let me just say this as well, and then I'll let this, and the others have thoughts or comments there. But one of the things that said about that organizational culture is one of the things that talked about, you know, once you develop that workplace culture, then there's a, you know, you've got to now maintain that culture. And so one of the things that talked about maintaining that culture is on the hiring process, hiring the people that fit within that culture. And it just, again, it just made me think so much of, if it's a racist culture, then they're not going to hire people to kind of disrupt that culture, you know? So, again, I just thought it very interesting. It all kind of fits into discussions about workplace and all, and dealing with leadership and management. And again, I'm just finding it a little challenging of, all right, how do I, you know, be that type of a person that the company's looking for, but yet still kind of hold back and not be that social, you know? I find it a little challenging. Anyone else have lost the comments there?
I was going to say a word, but I will pause. Do we have any black listeners, non-white listeners, who are in management in predominantly white jobs, where you have kind of figured out how to adjust your code while still being able to converse with the whites around you and function, be, I guess, jovial, or at least be perceived as a team player while you are still on course following your counter-racist code?
You asking to respond?
Got a couple of responses. Let's hear Stacy in the UK. So it's 2:34 a.m. Saturday morning across the pond. Yes, ma'am.
I'll be quick. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've been going through lots of challenges, although I have to say, you know, in as much as I've experienced racism quite a bit, you know, in previous roles, it wasn't as toxic as what I'm dealing with now. I probably was more codified than I realised, but serious, but interacting when I needed to. But what I would say is that over the last couple of weeks, or sorry, months, what I have been doing now is paying much more attention to the way in which actually white people in the team interact with each other. And I think we kind of underestimate how important it is to observe how they interact with each other, because I think it's already been said before on the program, they don't always get on, but they're very codified. But I noticed that there's a lot of fakeness and a lot, even in the everyday interactions. So whether they like each other or not, you know, there's the over teaminess, you know, clapping and congratulating each other when things get done for the most minor things, you know, or being extra, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you want to become sycophant, because it's really sickly, but it is that kind of behavior that really used to get on my nerves, or just really, I used to question it. But actually sometimes it's, you know, say for example, someone's run an event, emails will fly around and they're copying in the whole team. Oh, well done, such and such. And then the next person says, oh yeah, wonderful. I think, why do you need to copy everyone into all these emails? Because then my inbox is flooded with lots of messages that I really don't need to be in my inbox. But then this is part of the fakeness. And that's what they're doing to be seen to be teaming, when really they probably all despise each other. So I think we don't employ some of those tools, if you like. But I think those are the things to think about and ask lots of questions so that you don't need to reveal things about yourself, which is what I did on Monday at an event. I had to network with a number of people, and it was amazing how much people responded well to me just asking lots of questions about them and being interested in what they were talking about in terms of their themselves. Namu Malangas.
The most familiar mystery, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. says. But just to Stacy's point, I think that's so great about asking questions. I think you can consistently rely on the narcissism of whites, where the attention is focused on them and you can ask questions about them and what they're doing. I think you can really do a lot of, and just include that as both, this is a part of my work, my study for my advancement and protection on the job, and my study of what it means to be classified as white, where you're just studying, asking questions about the people that are around you, learning about them. And you can spend a lot of that time talking amicably, chummy, asking them questions and studying the whites that are around you. I think that's very solid recommendation. Was Princess, you were going to comment as well, ma'am?
Yes, I was going to say I'm actually in the process of a lot of the work that my dad deals with is dealing with a lot of classified information. And part of my role in his company now is what's called a facility security officer that I'm trying to study for and get certified for. Basically, while I was up there, he was talking to me about learning how to speak to people on a need-to-know basis. And that's pretty much how I've applied things in the system of white supremacy when it comes to workplace, is we know the problem primarily is white people, and where I'm at, I deal with a lot of people that classify themselves as Hispanic or Latino. And for me, I've already concluded that they are associated with white people more so. So I treat them accordingly, and they're on a case-by-case basis with me. Then you have, the only other a black person, Haitian, my good friend. And so I have certain conversations with her that I wouldn't have with anybody else. I have conversations with Hispanic and Latino people that I wouldn't, of course, have with a white person. And I keep it strictly business with white people. I don't share my social media account. A lot of people don't even know I have one. And in the past, when I've been asked, like when I left Friday, everybody was like, you can hit me up on Facebook. Oh, I don't have a Facebook account. I don't even use it that much. Oh, you got Instagram? No, I don't know how to use it. And it's just like, again, being able to know how to mitigate and secure information is what I'm just in me studying this. I've also been able to apply that in the workplace. And, you know, you could still be social with people, but they don't have to know really too much about you. I mean, getting familiar with your policy and procedure book is a good tool. You know, you can have, you know, your team meetings or build with your team members on a personal level, but always keep it professional. So that way, you know, like I don't have conversations about politics, religion, Area 8, nothing like that. Although, like, my friend who happens to be Haitian, we talk about stuff all the time. Again, this is somebody that I've already vetted and made sure that, you know, her and I are on the same page. And like she said, you know, I don't have, now that you're gone, I don't have anybody that's going to have my back here. And so just knowing how to feed people or control people with information on the need-to-know basis. You know, just learning how to, you don't always have to say everything to everybody. If they need to know something that's pertinent to you, then if you've already vetted them to make sure that they are who they are in relation to you, then that's the choice you make. But like I said, in the context of white supremacy, you know, there's certain tiers in which I allow certain information about me to get out to those individuals. You're a white person, that's not even a question. Hispanic and Latino people, because I know how they placate off of us, I'm definitely suspicious of, but I still give that kumbaya feel. But I always look out for me and my kind first.
Were there other folks who were going to respond to that question about how you function, I guess, especially if you're functioning as a manager, a supervisor, as they say, in a predominantly white work environment? How do you function while being codified, while still conversing and being cordial with the suspected racists that you work with?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is BX Ronan calling from New York again. And I would like to agree with everything that sister said prior. Definitely limit how much information is passed. I'm a veteran, Marine Corps veteran, and one of the things that I picked up during my time in the service was kind of dealing with being surrounded by white people predominantly, and how they operate, how they move, and in that regard, their racism was more, they spewed it more freely. They spoke their racism more freely. You dealt with people who had never seen a black person before. At least they claim, right? So in that regard, what back on the corporate side, when I got out of the military and I returned back to the corporate side, a strategy that I tend to use often is, you investigate them, and to some degree, on a small scale, I feel like you can manipulate them because of their ego and their arrogance. On a small scale, I feel you can manipulate them and limit the conversation to certain common grounds, frivolous things that aren't of too much importance. You know, and you never really show your hand too much. You don't let them know your inner workings as much. And definitely I 100% and I am in agreement with the social functions, like avoid the social functions, right? So avoid the social function as much because it's dangerous. You can end up getting caught in casual social situations that you can end up saying too much or being exposed to too much, and it'll risk your employment, it'll risk your position, it'll risk your job. It'll have the exact opposite effect of what it's claimed supposed to have, which is increase your security with your coworkers. It'll be the exact opposite, because if you don't behave as rambunctious as they do, then they'll take it personally and it'll end up affecting you negatively. So, you know, avoid the social functions. And me, myself, I tend to play towards the socially awkward ones. The more quote unquote nerds, the socially awkward ones. And in that realm, because they don't socialize either. So, you can get the inner workings of the company through them without ever really having to put yourself on the line of exposing too much, divulging too much information about who you are. So I don't really do the social functions. I avoid giving too much information and pretty much keep it, you know, very surface. How's the weather type of stuff, you know, current events, if that, but as long as it's not too political. Yeah, but I definitely agree with everything that Sister said before. And many of the suggestions that we often give on that you often hear on the show, avoiding social functions, sobriety, a lot of those things definitely, but it also plays into your stability in the workplace. At least it does for mine. I kind of adhere to those rules. And that's all. I'll mute my line.
Black brother, hell.
Context of white supremacy. We had a person, listener, who wrote in their commentary. My question, isn't it illegal for your boss to question you on your FMLA leave? I'm preparing to hand in my paperwork, and I'm sure my white female boss will harass me for it. At this point, the terrorism at my job has gotten progressively worse towards me. It's so bad, it's showing in my outside appearance, as in stress is a major trigger. My white female boss is dedicated, and he put that in all capital letters, to practicing racism against me. She consistently uses her biracial sons whenever she comes after me to protect herself. I guess insert cowbell. Even though I do not think biracial is a correct term, suggest that there are multiple races, there are not. I was scheduled to leave early the other day, and before I left, I had four whites and a victim surround me and watch me until I clocked out. These people watch me every day, but this particular day, it was much more intense. My boss has also told my coworkers to never help me, even when I have no choice but to ask for their assistance to complete my projects. They completely ignore me. My white female boss, who is married to a black male, has ran out all the black employees through the years. It's that bad. If that's one of those, if you have your recorder or if that's email or what have you, that someone on the job is saying that this person is never to receive help, like, wow, that is major. Mr. Fuller especially talks about using the Constitution. Are any other employees denied help on the job, reasonable, constructive help to get, you know, their duties and responsibilities complete? That's huge. That's something that you would want documented. In terms of the asking questions, I'm not sure in terms of it being illegal. I know just in a system of racism, white supremacy, I find it difficult to think that a white person would get in trouble for asking a question. Even if they're not supposed to ask a whole lot of questions and have an interrogation, I could just see whites finding a way to be able to ask some sort of question and that being an acceptable thing. So generally speaking, I think it's probably good for us to not be surprised and be prepared if a white person is going to ask a question. But I would have to double check to see if it's in terms of the legality about asking about FMLA. Was there another question? I don't think there was any other question. Just in terms of the stress, because we've had the audio segment that talked about that at the beginning that was exclusive to black females, that stress is going to be a problem regardless. If you're writing in and you're saying it's so bad, it's showing in my outside appearance, I would say pause right there. It is
definitely time for Mental Health Day, some form of self-care. If it's become that destructive in your life, it is definitely time for a pause. That is dangerous. That's how you end up with what they call John Henryism, and black people, Gwen Ifill passing away in her early 60s, other black people dying at a very early age, that sort of thing right there, where the fatigue and just being literally draining away your life force, dealing with this terrorism on the job. I've said consistently, we're under surveillance. That shouldn't be a surprise, but I mean, to have 4, 5, 6 people, a half dozen folks to watch you clock out because you're leaving early and you've already got issues. I mean, terrorism on the job. Again, a lot of times we find ourselves in situations that are not healthy. They're not constructive. This is not even something that's, yeah, we're doing what we want and building our career. This is, you know, was supposed to be something temporary and we end up being there too long. I'd say if you're in an environment where it's that bad, the stress and the abuse that you're facing is that bad that it's showing in your physical appearance, maybe we should be updating the resume and looking to exit this facility. You know, certainly it's not going to be a leaving in the next 5 minutes, but making an exit strategy if things have gotten that bad. Self-care is extremely important.
Yes, I had a question for the person who just wrote that. Are they taking a personal leave or is it FMLA? Because I believe it's two different ones. If he or she is doing an FMLA, is he taking time off to take care of a spouse or a family member or something? Because there's two separate forms that he or she would have to include to send to their HR department. If it's a personal leave of absence, then it's just, you know, whatever general information they're going to ask you to include a statement. Like, I had to get stuff faxed over when we went to Hampton to the facility, Hampton University, where he goes to get his treatments at. I had to scan and send the documents to the doctors up there, and they filled out the information and sent it back to me so I could send it to HR. So is he taking a family medical leave of absence to take care of a spouse or family member, or they just need personal time off?
I don't know. You have all the information I have access to at this point. I read in the email, but hopefully this person is listening. They can, you know, perhaps give us an update and I will share additional information.
Sorry.
No apology needed. Other folks, either last comment or question before we get ready to conclude. Last few minutes in the broadcast. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Can I be heard?
Let's see. Stacy in the UK and then caller in Florida. We'll get both of you. Stacy in the UK.
Okay, really quickly, Des, you were talking about the forms earlier on. I won't go into too much detail, but I was at an event this week. I think because you did say on the forms that you're surprised that there was only two, male, female. I was at an event this week and somebody was talking about gender. And they mentioned that they would hope to see that it would move beyond binary descriptions. So the binary, I guess, would be male, female, to up to 100 gender classifications, and reframing it as gender possibilities. Now, given that people are born either male, female, or I guess you could be, I can't remember the term, but some people are born without fully formed sex organ. So, you know, you could be both male, female. But either way, that would be the third, and it would just be variations on that. I can't understand what the other 97 would be. And I suspect the term is being mixed up with sexuality. But, yeah, so that is what I heard this week.
Contempt for gender, Mr. Fuller calls it. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I had two more ones from the Halloween week. Number one, it was a white female supervisor that was in the break room, and she had just finished doing some decorating on the door where they were going to have the luncheon. And she was walking to the vending machine, and she asked, why didn't I reply to the email invite? I said I wasn't participating. So she was just saying, well, you could just bring just anything, any kind of food or whatever. So I rejected again. So she was saying that, well, you know, this we're having a courthouse or clerk's office fellowship. That was the first term she used. And I said, you mean something like a church or something? And then she says, yeah, you know, we're brothers and sisters and a family. So I asked her, that analogy you're going to use? And she says, yeah. So I said, what member of the family am I? And she says, you know, you're just a massive part of the brothers and sisters that we have. And I said, is that a more powerful position or, you know, not so powerful? And she says, well, you know, it depends. And then I said something else. I said, am I like what, on a father level or what? And she said, now the response she gave me is she says, well, I'm not talking about a redneck family. And she walks out of the door, so I didn't know what that meant. And the last one was, there was a white female that dressed up as a cow. So I know, and I wanted to share this one because she actually had a cowbell at her desk. And she said that she was wearing the cowbell all day long, and she got tired of cowbell noise. And she said she was a cow supporting breast cancer awareness. So yeah, she held up the cowbell and rung it. That's all that I have for now. Thank you.
Black brother, like brother in hell.
They find more ways of encouraging us to be brothers and sisters in a total environment of terrorism. Brothers and sisters, let's come together and put our hands together, brothers and sisters. Watch out. Mr. Sayoc is bringing our pizza in. Come on, brothers and sisters. We love and cherish, especially love our black brothers and sisters. I mean, it's more ways of the nonsense. Anyway, the cowbell, I mean, what better than a heifer for Halloween and with the cowbell, no less. How fitting. We will call that a broadcast. Workplace racism now on Fridays didn't seem like it caused too many disruptions for folks the first week out. Hopefully it will be a smooth transition as we proceed. We will be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Dial in. We'll catch up on what happened the last 7 days and give a thought about the election. We just had Dr. Marvin Dunn on the program down in Florida also. We were talking about the governor's race, and he is very confident that Mr. Gillum is going to win. I was almost willing to take a wager to see who is going to be victorious. Maybe we can share a word on that tomorrow, but I will definitely be looking forward to the race next week for the governor's office in Florida. It's quite a few of them I'll be paying attention to, but that'll be tomorrow. Compensatory call in, and the program with Dr. Dunn is in the archives if you didn't get to hear it.
Live. We talked about that. Quite a bit of Florida politics, history, and racism. It was Halloween evening, no less. Instead of trick-or-treating, we were doing the serious business on our cosmic assignment in the archives. That's it. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Work party, in your personal life, whatever the case, we would be best taking care of our brain computer so that we can think of permanent solutions to the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up each and every time we are in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.